Many thanks to the two of you for absolutely superb papers, very interesting. There are obvious contrasts between your two papers and some less obvious ones, but the contrasts are, I think, certainly more conspicuous than the similarities in this particular case. But still, I believe or I hope that there's something to be learned from the contrasts themselves as well as from the few similarities. And I'll begin by mentioning some of the more glaring contrasts between the two papers we've just heard. So on the one hand, we have conversion to Christianity from religions we know very little about, in Bernard's case, in contrast with conversion from another monotheist religion that shares a corpus of sacred texts and traditions. We have conversion in a land where ecclesiastical institutions are virtually unknown in the first century's AD, again in Bernard's paper, and again in contrast with conversion in regions that, at least from an institutional perspective, can be said to be the cradles of Christianity. We also have conversion attested only through evidence that allows us to see the impact on communities or larger groups, in the case of the Alemanni, in contrast with conversion of individuals who are actually given more robust personalities in the sources that Christina studies. And I'd like to pause on this particular point for a couple of minutes. Individuals are all but invisible in Bernard's sources, and so are their motivations and the processes through which they were converted. This invisibility is not uncommon and will be familiar to anybody dealing with conversion in the Latin West. It is in fact a hallmark of sources on conversion in the Latin West that you barely see individuals. That's certainly the case with sources dealing with conversion in the insular world, which is what this research network is primarily concerned with. So from my point of view, as a historian of mainly the British Isles, the stress on individuals that we find in Christina's texts makes Christina's sources all the more remarkable. Well, her protagonists are by and large individuals. Whether or not these sources are reliable guides to the causes and processes to which these individuals were converted, I really don't know. But it is nevertheless that the sources themselves conceptualized individual agency in choosing to convert. And the sources also reflect on the reasons for conversion, be they personal reasons or doctrinal reasons. And I think the key words to watch out for here are individual agency and choice, which are concepts that are very central to studying conversion in the modern era, certainly central to any anthropological discussion of conversion. But these concepts are usually out of reach for historians of the medieval period, which also makes it very difficult to work with modern anthropological discourses in combination with the medieval evidence, which is something we might pick up on later on in this conference. Now, it occurred to me that there may be a coincidence between areas with urban continuity, like the Middle East, and this particular stress on individuals in texts that were written there. And perhaps vice versa. Individuals would be less conspicuous in texts that reflect rural societies, where we hear usually primarily more about mass baptisms. And you know, you get these masses of faceless individuals who convert. This is not a scientifically proven observation. This is just a gut feeling. And I'll be curious to hear what our speakers think about it. Is this a valid observation or not? Another possible coincidence with urban areas is the potential mobility of individuals, which we heard about from Christina, in comparison with a more static existence among the Alemanni. So this would be the difference between conversion coming to you and you going somewhere else to be converted, which is quite a rarity in the Latin West, at least insofar as our sources allow us to gauge how conversion happens. And again, I was wondering if the speakers, Christina and Bernard, have any thoughts on that. Now, the types of evidence that both Christina and Bernard covered form another major contrast between the two papers. Material evidence, with all its attendant problems of interpretation, is obviously crucial for investigating the conversion of the Alemanni. Whereas for the conversion of the Muslims that Christina studies, we have mainly hagiographical, polemical, anti-Muslim texts, anti-Muslim abjurations, and so forth. The type of surviving evidence, of course, also determines the subjects that one can potentially study. So Christina will have the luxury of being able to gauge doctrinal interfaith debates. And by doing that, she can then see clearly how converts were required to actively reject their former beliefs, whereas Bernard will have to continue to grapple with more basic aspects of evidence interpretation, for example, whether or not a certain inscription in Nordendorf in Bavaria satirizes Woden or indeed invokes him. In both papers, the question of the reliability of our written sources was stressed. And Bernard also raised the issue of intertextuality. So, for example, is Alcuin drawing on Jonas rather than describing actual contemporary events? And what is the significance of that? And mentioning Jonas leads me to the issue of hagiography and missions. Hagiography and missions. And I raise it because in either paper, we haven't heard anything about missions at all. This is in contrast with what is about to come in the rest of the conference, where we'll have quite a few papers dealing with missions head on. And missions, of course, also form a very central strand in the historiography of conversion in the British Isles and more broadly the insular world. I keep referring to the insular world because, obviously, this is the geographical remit of this research network. Now, with respect to missions, I understand that in Christina's case, missions may simply not have happened. But I wanted to ask Bernard, to what extent do you think missions actually contributed to converting the Alemanni, or are missionaries, at least insofar as we hear about them, not really significant agents? Some of their activities may perhaps have been overstated by sources and so forth. Something I found very interesting about Bernard's paper is the coincidence of pagan and Christian iconography. And Bernard rightly hesitates to apply the term syncretism to this particular coincidence. And this led me to ask about Christina's subject. How important do you think that fusion between the practice of Islam and Christianity might have been to the extent that we actually find robust enough evidence that attests this type of fusion? And I don't mean just practicing Christianity in secret while publicly going through the motions of being a Muslim, you know, predominantly Muslim society. What I mean is, can we detect any traces of something that we might be able to call perhaps a hybrid type of devotion? And if we do, is this a transitional type of devotion as people shift from one religion to another, or is this a sort of permanent hybrid form? And I'd like to end by echoing Bernard's point about the importance of admitting our ignorance and necessitating the use of interdisciplinary approaches to interpreting the evidence. And if either of you would like to develop the topic of interdisciplinarity, which is again something that we try to do in this research network, I'll be very grateful. Or we can indeed save that to the roundtable discussion at the end of the conference, by which point we will already have heard or have had input from speakers from other disciplines. So, you are now welcome to address any of the points that I've raised, or none. You can indeed pose questions to each other, and eventually we'll open up the floor for questions.